Measuring yourself is easy in some respects, like your age, your height, your weight, but not so easy in others, like your character, integrity, and maturity. But those are the real measurements we should be focusing on. Your quantitative info doesn't define who you are, it's your qualitative info that does. But growth doesn't just happen. It takes intentional accountability on your part. So welcome to The Measuring Post, a place where we can learn and grow together.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Measuring Post. My name is Joe Massa. I am the host of The Measuring Post, and today I have a very special guest, a financial advisor, because of course taking care of yourself and being better and learning and growing also means learning how to do that financially. So today I'm bringing on author who's also been featured on USA Today, Michael Secreta. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, thank you. Yourself?
Not bad at all. It's nice to finally get you on the show, and we're going to be talking about not only your perspective on financial advisement, the current marketplace, but also your amazing book, Money, Balance, and Joy, which came out last year, Money, Balance, Joy. So that's available on Amazon. I will put links up to that as we release this show on social media and YouTube. But for now, we got to know what that book's all about. So, you know, I really like the perspective that you present in that, and it's the importance of being self-aware, not only in the financial world, but also building the soft skills and learning how to do this financial journey in a balanced way that also brings you joy to your life, which of course is a very cliche way to use all three words of your title in your book, but it's a really awesome read. So kind of give me a bit of background on you and the inspiration for Money, Balance, Joy.
Sure. Well, first of all, the inspiration was over 30 years of helping financial advisors and helping individuals, especially helping the financial advisors provide a more holistic, healthier emotionally and financially relationships with their clients. And I looked around and saw nothing with this type of approach. Everything was written by insiders. You know, you read about their love of math, their love of financial planning, their love of investing, and nowhere did I hear, hey, the love of making new friends and helping them sleep at night. And so I originally started writing the book for financial advisors. I was about halfway through, and like, what am I doing here? You know, the financial advisors, the whole financial system is just this set in stone approach, this old way of helping people. And if I write to the advisors, they're going to ignore it. Unless I'm, you know, a successful financial advisor, and even then, they're going to ignore all the things that run counter to them. So I thought, all right, well, let me write a book to the individuals. Let's create a movement here. Let's create a wave where people are now going to their advisors, whether new advisors or existing advisors, and having a better way of how they can be helped, and kind of force the issue on the advisors. And the smart advisors will adapt and provide this better service, and the not so smart advisors will continue to be worried about AI and technology replacing them. So looking at it, so what's the thing that Wall Street's missed? Not only for individuals, but for Wall Street itself. And that is, it's all about the three E's when it comes to investing. Emotions, emotions, emotions. And you see it all the time. There's studies on this that show that there's a big gap that can exist between people who kind of manage their emotions and people who don't. Because what happens is, if you, including Wall Street people, if you don't manage, kind of sideline your destructive emotions and leverage your positive emotions, you're going to buy high, as they say, and sell low. And you're going to be probably too conservative and pay a comfort tax. And so all of a sudden, after 30 years, 40 years of investing, it's like, wait a minute, I don't have enough money to retire because, again, of that comfort tax of letting your emotions cause you to be too conservative. So that's what the whole book is about, is those three emotions. Those three E's with those emotions. So, you know, kind of, as you said, touched upon the self-awareness, the ability to guide a financial advisor, but the book itself is a journey, and it was designed not to be entertainment. There's so many self-help books or books on what you should do that are just entertainment. They toss out great ideas and people are like, oh, that's really good, and then never do anything about it. And so I had a boss, skip that. Anyway, it was funny though, his expression. But anyway, with that, I put in, this journey with, questions or, tutorials, but questions at the end of each chapter to help you better understand yourself, better understand how you've been reacting to different stimuli, if you will, with the markets and things around you, and how you've been in terms of really, managing your wealth and or managing your wealth advisor. And so it's not a do-it-yourself book, because when it's about emotions, you can't do it yourself. I mean, we all have seen or heard of psychiatrists and therapists and psychologists, and what do they try to, heal themselves? No, they go to other therapists, psychiatrists, psychologists. And so this is to, help the person, again, have these epiphanies. And advisors I know that I've trained that do this approach will tell me, Mike, instead of this 45 minute pitch meeting where I'm telling them how great I am, I'm having these really deep conversations where they're bearing their soul to me. And they say, I've never, had this kind of conversation with anybody. And through bearing their soul, they are getting these epiphanies it's cleansing for them to, it's like a therapy session, a real quick, instead of years of therapy, it's 2 or 3 hour conversation therapy. And it, all of a sudden, it becomes very clear, this clarity for these people, both who they are as people and where, they should be heading. And so that's kind of the goal here, and trying to help people do it, to do this change in as efficient and successful way as possible.
Yeah, I think that's pretty smart way to approach it, because not even just in the financial world, but in any aspect of life, when you lead and react solely on your emotions, you're destined to make some not so great decisions, whether that's young love or politics or religious thoughts or ideologies, finance. When you only focus on your emotional feelings and not your actual conscious thought process, and really it's a good way to cut through the fluff, like when you're mentioning having these really deep meaningful conversations instead of just the superficial, hey, I'm a financial advisor, I've got all this great information, you need me, hire me, we'll figure it out over time. But instead, really cutting to the core of why aren't you being successful right now, it's most likely because of the way you're handling your life and your finances and managing your time and balancing that. So I think you mentioned a really good point that I think is pretty accurate about a psychiatrist. Do they try to self-diagnose? Maybe to a certain degree, but to be successful, it's always good to have that outside opinion to come and kind of do an audit on you and your life and your finances and say, okay, I see what you're doing. Here's how we can make that a little bit better. So I really like that approach. And would you say that your book, Money Balance Joy, has like, is it like a, is there a homework at each lesson? You know, like, okay, here's what we're going to teach you in chapter two. At the end of it, here's the three or four things I want you to do to kind of incorporate that into your daily system.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of you going through this exercise of self-awareness and increasing it. And that the, you know, kind of that 2-3 hour first meeting that I've trained a lot of advisors on, where, you know, again, they're bearing their soul, where they're saying, oh, I never realized this was my problem. I never realized how self-defeating I was or what have you. So this is to help you go through that whole process before you sit down with your client, your advisor, or your potential advisor. And because that's going to put you way ahead of the game. But yeah, you know, so it's you know, those questions, there's, you know, they're not right or wrong. It's not asking you to you know, what are the three main points of this chapter? That kind of nonsense. It's helping you really understand how you tick. And that's so important today. It's, you know, we are in a society now that is, you know, people are hungering for community. People are hungering for meaningful connections with other people. And they're hungering for knowledge because we're just being inundated with information. And AI is just making it worse. You know, let's take, you know, bad approach with just throwing information out there and put it to the 100th power or the 10th power. And so, you know, you got to fight it. You can't just say, oh, well, hey, it's great technology, or hey, you know, Instagram or TikTok or any of these other things, Facebook. Oh, this is just so great technology. You got to look at it and really understand what's behind it, what the negatives of it. And you know, so we're as I said, we're so isolated, you know, the work from home, the COVID. I mean, there's going to be studies for the next 40 years on the effect, the psychological damage of the whole lockdowns and COVID and everything else that happened. And so you know, the people are just asking for this. They want this. They want authenticity. They don't want scripted. They want people who really care about them, who, you know, not, you know, so, you know, these financial advisors, you know, I say in my book, if a financial advisor, you know, potential advisor is sitting down with you and sends you an email, oh, we need all your investments to do an analysis before we talk with you. You say, no, I'm not, you know, you're not running the show here. I'm running the show. And we're going to have this conversation. And I, you know, basically there's three key things you need to know, and quite honestly, I need to know better. One is, what's been, you know, what's the source of my wealth? Huge, huge impact on how you feel about your wealth. Did you inherit it? Did you win a lottery? did you have 10 failed businesses before you started a business that was super successful and you sold it? Do you still own the business? I mean, there's all these things, and I've had advisors yell at me, what does the source of their wealth have to do with anything with the financial plan I put together? It's like, clearly, you don't know your value. And so that's the first. Second thing is, what are your goals? You know, the best way to say, what kind of financial and non-financial legacy do you want to leave when you're gone? So with your, children, do you want to just spend it all and too bad on them? When I used to work with some very, very wealthy families directly, some household names, I had one where, of course, it was a trust they had set up, sent the paperwork, and basically each kid was going to get like $1 million, and that was it. And all the other money was going to go away. And, that's theirs to do. They would donate the rest. And the only problem I had with it is they didn't tell their kids that. So and I wasn't going to advise them on that. But, if they told the kids from day one, hey, you're going to have to work, you have to be a good, citizen, to your community, to your country, then, or to your employees, all of them. That's super, super important. And then also from that is, what are your values? Now, here's a trick that I discovered years ago, and there's actually been at least one academic study on this. The more you look at your investments as an extension of your being, your values, the less likely you're to fall for those emotions. So when the markets are at an all-time high and everyone's confusing the high market for brains, you're not going to fall for that and all of a sudden increase the risk of your portfolio at the very time where the odds are it's going to go down 20% versus go up 20%. And then the same thing with, if the market's gone down 20% and every fiber in your body is telling you, oh, I should sell, the bombs are going off, I'm just going to jump in the bomb shelter. That if now you're looking at this as, no, this isn't just a jumble of investments, this is me. This is, my legacy. And look at the legacies of universities and endowments. They have such a long-term view that they don't care. They care, but they're not going to, all of a sudden sell and sit on the sidelines. They are instead saying, all right, we're going to ride this out because this is who we are. This is our goals. With that, and then the third thing you really want to have with that advisor is, what's your experience with Wall Street? Do you have any? A lot of people, they are looking to find an advisor, and because they sold a business, they had some kind of windfall, they flipped a few homes, all of a sudden now they have $1 million or $2 million, what have you. So what's your experience with Wall Street? Kind of what's worked well for you, what's confused you, what's frustrated you? Now this is all really important. So one of the things, the other secret, besides, viewing it as an extension of you versus just a jumble of investments, is to avoid the comfort tax. Now, you have these financial advisors. Oh, I'm so great. I have these investment managers. And these investment managers, they're the best. And, they're in the top quartile. They're in the top decile. And the thing with those, they're they're looking at it, and it's like, what's the most you can get if, you know, your advisor is truly this great investor? And I would argue you don't want your advisor as your investor. But, you know, or any outside advisor, you know, maybe, what, at most one percentage point on a consistent basis, half a percentage point. But if you look at the comfort tax, and I did this study with some data, over 30 years of data provided to me, that, you know, and you know, most people that do these risk tolerance surveys, advisors, it's a CYA thing, folks, and you know, most people come out conservative or moderate. So they put them in there, they set it, they forget it, and all of a sudden now, it's 30 years later, 40 years later, and they could have made, you know, 30%, 60% more if they were more aggressive, if they went out on that risk tolerance continuum. And now that, you know, you have to be a talented advisor to help your clients go out on the risk tolerance continuum, but the added value is so much more than being in the top mutual fund, being with the top ETF, being with any of that. And so you know, you got to really look at that. And you know, all this is stuff that I haven't been hearing anywhere. And from advisors, it's all about, you know, come bask in my brilliance. You know, I have this, yeah. I have that. And different information. You know, fiduciaries are the only way to go. Fiduciaries, you know, anybody that's not a fiduciary is garbage. And, you know, all these things you hear. And, you know, Bernie Madoff was a fiduciary. You know, so there you go.
There's always examples, yeah, and that's a ton of great information, and I want to backtrack and go through a few of those topics just because they're interesting to me. Obviously, the AI is one of those things that is booming in all industries, certainly financial, and it's kind of like a shiny object syndrome where you're trying to figure out how to plan your finances or really anything in the business world, and then anytime you do a Google search, the first 30 options are AI generated, and then you go down these rabbit holes learning about the, you know, each platform, each product, and it's almost like this analysis paralysis where it's like, I don't even know how to begin to address any of these because they all look amazing on their little websites and on their papers. And, you know, I would imagine that's very similar to financial advisors. They all can put themselves in really good light and look really strong. And like, this is the guy for you or gal for you. And without having that holistic conversation about, you know, what you talked about, all these different angles that need to be addressed and understood by the advisor to really understand who I am as a core individual, but how am I going to have a successful financial future plan if I don't even understand who I am right now in this current moment? And I think it is good to have that sort of audit, like how conservative or moderate am I being and where can I be more aggressive to be more successful over that 30-year period? Because a lot of people, myself included, that's just not my strong suit. Now I have a 401k, I've got a Roth IRA, and I have some money market accounts and things I try to put little money in here and there, but am I as aggressively monitoring them as I should be? Almost certainly no. You know, and that's something that, again, hearing from somebody with that holistic approach to finances and really sort of understanding not only Wall Street, but the market in general, it's very reassuring that I need to go do these things and talk to an advisor and an investor and somebody that's better at this than I am, because I don't want to miss an extra 30 or 60% my retirement account at the end of my life. So yeah, that's obviously something that needs to be addressed.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, AI, a while ago, they had what was called robo-advisor. So it was a pre-AI version of having a financial advisor, because some tech person in his or her brilliance thought, oh, this is great. Let's just have this thing where you plug in information about yourself, and this algorithm is going to spit out, this is what you should do. This is how much you have in stocks, how much in bonds, everything else, how much you should be saving, what have you. And completely missing the point of the value of actually working with a human being. And I remember all the advisors panicking about robo-advisors. Oh, this is the end of my business. And I was like, if you're put out of business by a robo-advisor, you're not doing your clients any service. You're not really adding any value. And what happened? The robo-advisors weren't getting individuals. And so they had to pivot, a new term, or a recent term, and go and sell to advisors so that, this will help you do less non-client-facing activity. Because there are studies that show that the more client-facing activity an advisor has, the happier their clients are, and the happier and wealthier the advisors are. And so now I look at AI. It's just, again, the same bad idea, but now to the 10th or 100th power. There's just so much, nonsense, crap, whatever word you want to use, from AI. I'm on LinkedIn, and now and then I get asked to be an expert on some topic. And so usually they're good. And, they kind of have the kind of good guides. And recently I got one. I was like, this thing is horrible. who put this together? And I even kind of ripped into it, you asked about my professional opinion. I'll tell you, this is, there is such thing as a stupid question. So then I reread it. I get a thing after. So what'd you think of our new AI generated thing? And it's like, oh, no surprise. It's kind of like, I saw something recently, an actor, producer, Gordon something Hewitt or something, and he was talking about that. He says, creativity, art, you can't define it. So, working with an individual, one-on-one, helping people with their emotions is as much an art as it is a science. And if you don't believe that, then I don't know what to say. But now, if it's mostly an art, if you're a psychologist, yes, all the knowledge part, that's your learner's permit. I remember when I was graduating from college, and one of the business people at our beach club was like, say, congratulations. So just know that all you have is a learner's permit. And, you're not ready for being a race car driver. And so you have, these learner's permits, but now the art part comes in. How you communicate people, your facial expressions, everything, pacing, the cadence even of your speaking. All this has a huge impact. Active listening. If anyone wants to be more successful with work, with being a financial advisor, really understand and practice active listening. It's going to open up so many opportunities. It's going to make you more likable with coworkers, with bosses, with clients. And it's going to help you be more successful. Because right now, everyone is listening to respond, not listening to understand. And active listening helps you. Because you know, it's the old thing, oh, you got two ears, one mouth. Well, if you know, even if you're doing 95% listening, if you're not having the right kind of attitude, perception of what I'm supposed to be doing with this information, then, you know, so what? And we see this all the time with people. So it's, you know, again, it's this undefinable art. And, I mean, I can't tell you how many different new styles of painting, new styles of music, even classical music, I forget the artist, the composer, but it was like a near riot because a composition that he wrote. And you look at it today like, well, I don't get it. What, how can there be a riot? It's beautiful music. And so you have this stuff that wherever it comes from, and when you do that, then, you know, look at it that way rather with this art. How can AI replace human thought? How can AI replace creativity? You know, I did this
thing.
Yeah,
it just seems like that's being kind of forced down our throats right now, but it should be used as a tool, not a replacement. I wholeheartedly agree with that. One other thing I thought you mentioned that I want to get into a little bit on, like the lockdown, the COVID lockdown and the isolation. So you have this philosophy that don't let any crisis go to waste. You know, there is a silver lining to crisis. So, like, how would that apply to something like the lockdown where people were isolated? And is that, like, is there a financial win that can come from that sort of,
well,
you know, activity?
Let's look at inflation, something we're experiencing right now. Is it okay if I do it for inflation?
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's look at inflation. You know, very, very interesting. Just saw some stats that, you know, last month, study came, you know, these stats came out. United States was the only country where, you know, fear of inflation as the number one response, you know, that fear of inflation increased. All the other countries went down. So it was like 41%. That's the number one problem that Americans have. Now, then, similar, you know, the same company did a study and said that with people having a somewhat to a positive, strong positive view of the economy was around, 50%. And so we're in this tale of two cities now. And so you have, you know, essentially half the population that's suffering from this. Why? Because they don't have the extra income. They're not able to do a side hack. They're not able to, you know, just work harder and make more money. They're at a company that they get 3% raises a year, maybe 5% if they're really behaved. And that's what companies want you to be, is behave. And, you know, so they now, you know, we went from 40% of the population living paycheck to paycheck to 70%. And that's a huge crisis. You would never know about it. Do you see anything in financial media? Do you see anything with, you know, all these, you know, pundits and experts and, you know, TikTokers and everything else? No. And so let's look at it now. Kind of the same thing. Winston Churchill with World War II. You know, never let a good crisis go to waste. Don't just sit there wringing your hands like, oh, Hitler's coming. do something. And so there's the what I call the three Eves: how you perceive, how you conceive, and then how you, I can't remember the third. how you perceive, how you receive, and how you conceive. Sorry about that. And so the first thing is perception. To say, you know what, this is an opportunity. If you look at a holistic total wealth life of having money, balance, and joy, of being fulfilling, meaningful life where, you know, you're making good money, doesn't have to be a lot, but it's enough for you to have that lifestyle, a good lifestyle. Not the best, not, you know, trying to keep up with the Joneses, or trying to keep up with the Kardashians and all these other celebrities, you see. But, you know, you have enough for that. Then you have enough time. So you have monetary wealth, time wealth, and social wealth. So you have enough time that you're able to enjoy life, enjoy your family. And then you're able to, the third part, you're able to have that joy that comes with it. Now, these are all interdependent. One helps the other. Having more money helps you with the time and with the social. Having, you know, more balance and social helps you with the money. And so now, looking at it that way, say, okay, so let's take this situation. So let's, you know, again, first of all, perceive. We want to make sure that we know that this isn't the first time people have benefited from a crisis and come out stronger and happier. Then the conceive part. So how do I do that? Or receive part, I'm sorry. So the receive part is taking in all this knowledge that's out there. All this, you know, what do? You look at your expenditures. You know, a lot of people spending tons of money without thinking of how much they're spending on it for subscription services, for phones, for vacations, and do you really need to go into debt to go to Disney World? Well, if you know you're a wealthy person, you're not going to go into debt. But when, I don't know what it was, 60% of people went into debt to go to Disney World and Disneyland this year, you want to say, no, I could do something local. I could do something that's not as expensive, go camping, do stuff, have these great family experiences or couples experiences without having to spend a lot of money. And, or, you know, saving for years for that great vacation and sacrificing everything. Just, you know, say, hey, I can't do the great vacation, but I could do, you know, equally great, cheaper vacation. So, you know, kind of receive all those ideas on how to do it, and then conceive is, okay, here's, you know, let me implement. Let me go through everything. Do I have an attic full of things that, you know what, I could sell online and make $1,000 or a few hundred dollars? Do I have a storage unit that I'm spending $100, $200, $300 a month that I could just sell all that stuff or get rid of all that stuff for free, and I'm saving hundreds of dollars a month? So to really go through all that, if you were thinking of sending your child to an expensive private school, there's, I don't know, 20-some states where if you're in state with the state schools, they're either free or very low tuition. Send your kids to Canada. That's cheaper, too. They have excellent colleges, and well, mostly universities. They have excellent universities up there, and they're far cheaper. I know people have done that, and their kids saved a fortune. So there's, you know, just things you can do today. Now, there's things that are longer term for that. So, you know, learn from this so that, say, 5 years from now, you're doing really well and making good money. You got some good raises, change job. Oh, that's the other thing. You know, consider changing jobs. Best way to get a 50% pay raise. 60%.
Go somewhere else. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
I know somebody did great work, a relative. She did great work. It was all remote, and they kept having her do more and more stuff, and she got great experience with that, and then went someplace, got a 50% raise, and boom, done, gone. And so, you know, there's all these things you can do, but then long term, so it's 5 years from now, and, you know, kind of you've caught up with the increase in inflation, which for some people it will take 4 or 5 years, and now you're doing well. Well, you think twice before you buy that big fancy house as soon as you got a new job with a raise. Or, you know, you got that bonus and you spend most of it on fun instead of putting a good portion away in investments. And, you know, the greatest generation, you know, my parents' generation, they were depression babies. And, you know, I grew up in a very wealthy community, and they always lived beneath their means. Every one of them. You know, yeah, they might have a beautiful sailboat, but, you know, they could have had, you know, a 200-foot instead of a 100-foot sailboat. They had nice houses, but they could have had, you know, a mansion. And it's kind of getting people to, you know, use this right now, inflation, both today, things you can do immediately. And, you know, isn't it great you say, okay, I can't spend, you know, a ton of money going out to fancy restaurants. So, you know what? Let's take turns with the neighbors or with friends and have, you know, potluck dinners. And now you're sitting around, you're talking, you're joking. You know, it's not, oh, an hour, hour and a half at a restaurant with people. It's now a whole evening. And the stories that come out of that and the memories that come out of that. So that's what I'm saying. There's cheaper things that give you more memories, give yourself a more fulfilling and meaningful life.
Yeah, I find those experiences more enjoyable personally. I would much rather go hang out at a friend's house or a family member's house and barbecue and spend a fraction of the price, but get more time and memories. And, you know, I think just kind of listening to what you're talking about, using an experience like inflation right now or the COVID or any other economic or social sort of crises that are happening, they kind of can help us become less complacent. Even including with your job, like it's really easy to just keep paying Netflix and Hulu and Disney Plus and stay at your same menial, mediocre job because I don't have to do anything. I'm already doing that. So, but using these social cues of saying, hey, my money's not going as far as it used to. Okay, what can I do? Well, I can not go on big vacations. I can eat out less. I can get a better job. It's going to force you to maybe take an internal look at what you're doing currently that you can change, even little tiny dynamics that can have a pretty substantial effect on your, you know, not only your monetary situation, but your enjoyment and your time. Because I think we always get caught up in this rat race of money, 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 always the mighty green dollar we're chasing. But the most important resource and asset we have is time. And how much time are you wasting chasing that green dollar when you're missing your kid's dance recital, or you're not spending time with your sick mother or father, or you didn't get to meet your neighbor for that happy hour or barbecue because you're so busy consumed trying to find financial success that you're overlooking what I really like most about your book is the balance. Where's your time money balance come in? Where's the scale? When does it tip past the point where it's not worth it anymore? And I think, you know, looking at some of these external crises, they can help you find really that balance and where you need to focus your time and energy.
Yeah, absolutely. And you look at very wealthy people, and I was very fortunate as a child, as I said, to live in a community that was wealthy with both old money and new money. And, you know, the people I saw, they all had balance. And the money, you know, they loved the work. They loved the building a business, or they loved, you know, whatever they did. And, you know, a lot of them had very interesting businesses or jobs, but they still found the time for family, found time. And as I said before, if you look at really successful people, where, you know, people where, you know, prospects, friends, everyone wants to be around. You know, you look at, you know, most of these, you know, billionaires, they were not driven by money. They were driven by, you know what, I want to change the world. I want to help people. I want to do things. And that's what they focused on. And, you know, it just so happens if you're able to do that, you're going to make money. But it's not just that kind of money. And, you know, this, you know, yes, you have people like Steve Jobs was only about the company. Yes, he wanted to change the world and make things better, but didn't want to make things better for his employees, didn't want to make things you know, he didn't help with all his wealth with the community. He didn't say, you know, hey, how else can I give back to the world, you know, like a lot of other people. But it can't be, you know, it's a cliche, oh, that, you know, you shouldn't be driven by the money, you should be driven by wanting to do things. But it pretty much is the case. And, you know, again, that
hard to intertwine those two dynamics, I would say. But even looking at a guy like Warren Buffett, you know, CEO of Berkshire Hathaway, he lives in the same house he had since 1953, a little brick house. And guy like Elon Musk, the richest man on planet Earth, he doesn't even own a house, lives in and out of hotels. I mean, and he's out there anyways, because, I mean, the guy works 75 hours a day, it seems like. He's always doing something and runs 90 billion companies. But you look at someone like that with just unlimited power and money, and he's still out there trying to give to the world and give free internet to places that are disparaged. And so, yeah, it's the money has to be there to give that sort of amount to the world, or like to have that much of an effect on the world. But it's like the chicken and the egg, you know, which came first? And it's something that, luckily for myself, I'll never have to deal with, because I don't ever think I'll be worth $200 billion. But, you know, if I was, I would like to think that I would give and use that money for something good.
Yeah, but even the sense of community, and to, you don't have to be rich. And, you know, when I make my fortune, then I'll donate money. That's really transactional. You don't feel part of a community because you're giving $500,000 or $1 million to them on up. But if you're involved with that community, and, you know, you have, Gary Sinise, you know, Lieutenant Dan. And, you know,
I love his story.
His fame to help people. So, he would go do USO tours with the band. Then he starts seeing all this stuff, hearing stories about different soldiers or, ex-soldiers and, the terrible lives that they had, which is one of the biggest crimes, is the suicide rate, the homelessness rate of our U.S. military. We have such a small percentage of people that actually step up to the plate. And, military, my family, they very fortunate that they weren't in that situation. So then he started raising money and donating it. And then, traveling around and, he not only to kind of give money, kind of generate publicity, get more funds, but also to really see, hey, we're helping these people. Versus the wealthy people, the celebrities especially, that just get into politics. I talk about Kardashians, but you think about it, with Kim Kardashian, with helping with the whole criminal, she went to Trump, hey, there's all these people that are in prison that, kind of crazy terms, not really fair, and we need some kind of reform there, and, nobody else ever did it, and, Trump said, oh, okay, so whatever you think of those two people, they were making some kind of change, but, versus...
Yeah, they used a platform that they had developed and they did something with it, whether you like their approach or not. I think that's a really important way to look at it, no matter whether we're talking about being on the billionaire, millionaire scale or just your local Joe Massa neighborhood down the street. Like, I don't have that sort of financial or social platform or pull, but I can still do things on my level that benefit and help my neighbors and community. And I think that kind of leads into one of the other topics I wanted to kind of finish with, is what we talk about, embracing life fully, but also like living each day with intention and purpose like it's your last. And sometimes that could be by giving and just, like when I die, I can't take my sailboat or my car or my money. It doesn't go with me. So, people won't remember always what you said or how much money you had, but they will remember how you made them feel and what you gave back. So like, go into a little bit about your sort of approach on embracing life fully and living it like your final day is today.
Yeah, first of all, life isn't fair. Get over it. And you're not perfect. Get over yourself. And you mean in general, not you specifically.
Sure. Thanks for clarifying.
Just want to make sure. Anyway, but, life isn't fair. We're not perfect. Other people are not perfect. We're all kind of just wildly going through life. It's kind of like the whole thing of talk about Lieutenant Dan of Forrest Gump, the movie, what's our path? That it'll come to you. It'll just happen, and you got to be open and ready for that. And lost my wife at 41 years of age, died suddenly. Now, fortunately, she had a very fulfilling, meaningful life, very involved in the community in many ways. But if it was something where she was just like, oh, I'm just going to put off doing any of this stuff. I'm just going to do work. That's all I'm focusing on is money. How awful would that be? That, she never got to that point. And So looking at it is you don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. You could be perfectly healthy today and tomorrow find out you have stage four some type of cancer. And so you really have to, and you look at some people who kind of have a family where, say, the, you know, it's a son and father died young, the grandfather died young, and, you know, kind of they look at it as, geez, I got to really get the most out of my life while I'm here. And to really look at that, and it's not about, you know, kind of Kennedy's inauguration speech of, ask not what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country, which he actually stole a version of that from his boarding school, but why not?
And still worked.
It still worked, exactly. And but it's kind of the same thing. It's not about what others can give you. It's what you can give others. And to, you know, to be that friend where it's not transactional, where you're not keeping track of favors, where you're not, you know, be involved, volunteer work, you know, as long as it's enjoyable. You know, just go out of your way to start helping people. And if you help people, and, you know, and call BS on yourself. And, you know, when you when you overreact with somebody, you know, say, you know, hey, I overreacted. You know, I, you know, whether they accept your apology or not doesn't matter. What matters is you had the, you know, whatever you want to call it, to honesty to say, hey, I was bad, and, you know, being a better person.
I really like the fact that the book kind of discusses how money is like the tool that can help you find the time, and using your time's greatest as your greatest resource to help you be able to do things that are joyful to your life. And I know that's kind of going through the title of the book, but really they do go hand in hand. It's really hard to make them not be so intertwined, because in order to find time, like you mentioned, you do need to have some money. But money should not be the end-all, be-all goal in life, because as we mentioned, you can't take it with you when you die. You want to have the time to be able to spend with your family, your friends, your community, and those things in turn will bring joy to your life and value to your life. So I really like that, living every day as if it's your last, because you never truly know when it is going to be your last. And again, no one's on their deathbed saying, hey, I wish I would have spent that extra overtime hours in the office. And nobody's ever going to think that way. But we all look back and say, wow, I really wish I had more time with my son and daughter, or my friends, or my family, or my parents, or my significant others. So I think that living life as if it is your last day every day benefits you not only financially, but holistically and spiritually as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, just a couple other thoughts, you know, in terms of don't live in the past. Don't try to change people's minds. It's very difficult. You know, and it just gets very frustrating. It just let them be. You know, if they feel a certain way, okay. You know, it's easier to change one's view through your activities. You know, first change your activities, change that, and that will shape your view. Versus, oh, I got to change my view first. And so you kind of set things. You know, the subtitle of my book, Improving Your Life Story. Everyone wants to have a great life story. You know, Wes Anderson, great movie writer, director. In his movie The Royal Tenenbaums, the Gene Hackman character, you know, this ne'er-do-well father, and he's like, well, yeah, I really want to mite there in the cemetery for a reason, and he's like, yeah, I'd love to have a headstone that says, you know, I saved a shipload of people or something like that. You know, save 20 people, a ship's going down or something like that. And, you know, kind of, we all have that life story that we want. And to say, okay, you know, today's the first day of changing our life stories. And to, you know, organize it. You know, to have a plan. Have a person that, you know, accountability person, you know, to, you know, set up things. Well, I'm going to do, right now I'm going to do more volunteer work. So for the next 2 weeks, I'm going to find a place where I could do. Now, does that have to be the volunteer place for the rest of your life? No. It could just, you know, you may try it for a month and it doesn't work out. So be it. Then it's easier to find another one. And, you know, we always think, oh, this is something that's got to last forever. You know, just try it. And if it works out, great. So set that plan. Start that. You know, maybe grab a friend who you're having a conversation and, you know, hey, you know what? I got to improve my life story. I want to do this. See how they react. Like, they may say, yeah, I kind of been thinking the same thing, but didn't want to say it. Well, you know, hey, let's be each other's accountability buddy. And maybe even do that volunteer work together, what have you. It's always easier when you have a plan, when you have timelines, when you have accountability, you know, somebody to help you with that, to actually make that change.
Yeah, and I think one thing you said earlier was, you know, obviously you can't change people's minds, but we also can't change the past and what's already happened. Yeah. And I think there's a cool saying that kind of really sums that up. It's the best time to plant a tree was 20 years ago, but the next best time is tomorrow. So yeah. We can't worry about what you didn't do already, whether that's financial or with your relationships or work life or any of those sort of things. We can't go back and fix what hasn't happened, but we can start today moving forward and tomorrow moving forward and put those wheels in motion and those plans into actual practice. And I think that's a lot of what your book really highlights. It's, you know, where are you currently? Don't worry about yesterday in the rearview mirror, but where are we going to go forward and how can we make your money benefit your time, benefit the joy that you find in life? And I really like just sort of that, like, looking forward always. You know, there was another, and this is kind of a hokey saying, but it's true. It's like the rearview mirror in your car is that big, but your windshield is huge. It's because you should be focusing on looking forward and not the little tiny mirror going backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, you know, I touched upon earlier that, you know, kind of the stress all of us have with this, you know, before AI, with social media, we're being bombarded with data. We're being bombarded with orders, if you will. Think this way, do this, do that. And what's really missing, and it's not my idea, authors have written about this, we're missing kind of that narration. We're missing that story, you know, that's better than, you know, because that is, that lowers the stress, you know, rather than, you know, being barked at by strangers about what you should be doing and how you should be thinking. You know, it's like the worst advice is when someone's upset, you know, snap out of it. You know, there's a lot of people that have a lot worse off than you. Rather than, you know what, knowing what you've been through, I could see why you'd be down. And, you know, kind of, what things are you doing? You know, guiding questions. What things are you doing to get out of that? Have you thought about maybe doing some volunteer work, what have you? But, you know, we need more of that, you know, actual narration, stories. And that's why your podcast and other podcasts are fantastic and why they're so popular. I mean, you know, Joe Rogan, this person, that person, they make an absolute fortune because people are just gravitating to this rather than just being shouted at. with what you should do, or you know, how you should invest, or how you should live your life, and you know, the kind of the quick tips. And you know, yeah, I do post things on Instagram, but it's just to get people interested enough to buy the book, or interested enough to actually have the conversation with somebody. And so, you know, thank you certainly for your podcast, because you're helping, you know, in a large part, reduce the stress that people have when it comes to investing, because, again, all this quick data that's being thrown at them.
Yeah, and I appreciate you being a guest on the podcast. You know, I find that podcasts in general, their viewers and listeners are typically much more engaging because they're deliberately choosing to tune into this content. The same way that you are when you read a book like Money Balance Joy. If I have to buy your book, wait for it to come, physically open it and read it and digest that content, I'm engaged in it. I wanted to choose to read this information. And I think that podcasts are very powerful that way for that exact reason. It's not like hopping in your car to go to the store and whatever's on FM radio is just what you're listening to. Like, you chose to tune in, download this content, and learn from it. And that makes this a powerful medium. But it only works if we got great guests like you to come on and also share information that maybe isn't so mainstream or easily readable on like a Google search. Like, I can't recreate your 30 plus years of experience in a 30 minute Google search. Now, I can get a lot of content, but to be able to process that and to kind of dissect the information I'm reading and use it daily, that's a whole nother matter. So, you know, I feel like we've just scratched the surface of what your book Money Balance Joy is all about. But I know for me, I have a copy of it and I have began to read it. I have not finished it yet, just for full transparency. But I love the way it's designed. I like the content that I've read so far, and your willingness to share this and present these topics in a way that even in a 1 hour long podcast, it definitely creates a lot of intrigue around the book, and also just the thought process of that holistic financial balance time sort of mantra that you're kind of putting out there in the financial world. So I really enjoyed the conversation with you today.
Good. I enjoyed it. Yeah, definitely loved the questions you had and the important things that you focused on that shows me that you really understand this.
Yeah, and your insight is certainly something that I will be promoting, because I think it's a really valuable topic that people need to understand better. And also, you know, be smarter with your finances. But that comes from getting that full audit and having an accountability partner and reading great books like Money Balance Joy that's available on Amazon. I will put links up to that. And really consider purchasing a copy and getting into the nitty-gritty of it, because don't be so bullheaded. My mom used to always tell me, because that's kind of my mantra it myself is bullheaded. Don't be so bullheaded that you think you know everything that you can't learn more. And take somebody else's knowledge and experience and apply it to yourself, because it might save you a lot of time and headache trying to learn everything on your own. You don't always have to reinvent the wheel when you can read somebody that's already been down that path and they can teach you things that are valuable and beneficial to your quality of life. And that's really what I'm picking up from Money Balance Joy. And obviously, this is the author of that book, Mr. Michael Secreta. So, sir, I appreciate your time on The Measuring Post. Hopefully we can touch base in another episode in the near future. And I'll let you know after I've finished reading the book. And hopefully we got a lot of people out there joining the movement and learning the techniques of Money Balance Joy.
Yeah, and with my book, I'd ask you to put my email up too, because in my book, at the end of every chapter, I have my email address. And you know, if you have questions, something doesn't sound right, or you don't really fully agree or understand the point I'm trying to make, by all means, shoot me an email.
And off the top of my head, because I've been emailing you, that's mike.s@moneybalancejoy.com. But I will put that in the links. I'll also include your Instagram and links to the book where they can find that Amazon and other retailers for Money Balance Joy. But yeah, that's also refreshing because you don't always get access to the people that write things and host things. So just being available and open to hearing from, you know, our listeners and your readers, I think is really cool in its own right. So again, thank you, Mike, and appreciate your time, sir. And can't wait to get into the rest of that book.
Thank you.
Have a great day.